You're listening to Red Eye on Vancouver Cooperative Radio, CFRO 100.5 FM.
25 years ago, last Monday, the Supreme Court of Canada gave a landmark ruling that overturned the country's anti-abortion laws. In a case against abortion doctor Henry Morgenthaler, the Canadian state decriminalized the service. The abortion services currently available across the country exist because of this ruling, yet access is not universal, and the security of existing clinics remain under threat. Carolyn Egan is a spokesperson with the Abortion Rights Coalition of Canada and the Ontario Coalition for Abortion Clinics. She joins me this morning by phone from Toronto. Good day, Carolyn.
Hi, how are you?
I'm fine, yourself?
Good, thank you very much.
So let's get a better understanding of what it was like to try to access abortion services before this Supreme Court ruling. Under what circumstances did women have access to abortion?
Well, it was a very privileged access. I'm talking about my experience here in Ontario, but it was probably quite similar in British Columbia and other parts of the country. If you were a middle-class woman who had access to a private gynecologist or could go, in our case, south to Buffalo and could pay for that out of your own pocket, you had access. But if you were not, if you were a young woman or a woman of low income or an immigrant woman, a woman from a First Nations reserve, from rural Ontario, interior BC, most probably, it was very, very difficult. And so there was unequal access across the country. The other thing was that the therapeutic abortion committees that were in place because of the federal law took the decision of whether or not to have an abortion out of the hands of women.
Please describe for us these therapeutic abortion committees for those who aren't familiar.
Sure. Well, the law came into play in 1969 and essentially said that if the life or health of a woman was threatened by a continued pregnancy, she could have an abortion as long as it was approved by a therapeutic abortion committee, which was made up of three physicians, none of whom would have been actually her physician, none of whom would have actually met her, and it would have to be done in an approved or accredited hospital. Many hospitals across the country did not set up these committees, and in some instances, and I know this happened in British Columbia and some areas of Ontario, those who were opposed to abortion took over the committees and declined to approve any abortions.
And the ones that they did approve would somehow be kind of deserving or extreme circumstance kind of thing? Or?
It really varied. Some were very extreme circumstances. Some, you'd have a committee of doctors who would take a more liberal view, but the physician who was putting the case forward had to say that the woman was suffering from anxiety or depression or had some kind of emotional or mental health problem. And this was, of course, very demeaning to women, and it took away the right to make that decision themselves.
And then there would be many women who wouldn't even go to a hospital but would have an illegal abortion outside of the system.
Well, these things certainly did take place, but I think a lot of women went south of the border. They would go to Buffalo or probably Seattle, if you're talking Vancouver, and some would, of course, access more dangerous procedures in their own community.
And so what would happen if a doctor decided to perform an abortion under this law?
They would be criminally charged, and there's the example, of course, of Dr. Henry Morgenthaler, and that had happened in the province of Quebec, but there, no jury would find him guilty, even though he clearly broke the law. And then in 1976, when the Parti Québécois came into power, it made the determination that they would not enforce the federal law in the province of Quebec. So Quebec had access to procedures for women that the rest of the country did not have. And then when we were looking in Ontario at the circumstance we were facing, as I described earlier to you, we had decided that the best way forward was to follow that same strategy as they had in Quebec and find a physician willing to challenge the law and build a broad-based movement to organize the pro-choice sentiment that was there.
And this was the 1980s?
That was the early 1980s, that's correct.
So did you open a clinic in Ontario?
We did. We talked to Dr. Morgenthaler, and he had to determine whether it made sense for him, because he had been jailed in in Quebec and had a heart attack, and his finances were all frozen. I mean, he went through quite a lot. So we did talk to him. He made the decision. Another doctor was thinking of doing it. Didn't work out. But in the end, Dr. Morgenthaler, Dr. Smalling, and Dr. Scott determined to do this. And Dr. Morgenthaler did open a clinic in Ontario. And that was in 1983. And we had been working very hard with the trade unions and the broader community to build support. And that clinic was raided after a short period of time by the police, and the doctors were arrested.
How did abortion services end up becoming decriminalized in Ontario? Was it part of this 1988 ruling?
Yes. What happened was when the doctors were arrested, and we were, of course, building a movement, and there was a cross-country movement in British Columbia, in the Maritimes, all over, and in support of overturning the federal abortion law, repealing the federal abortion law. And so we were having national days of action. There was a lot of activity going on, and, of course, the doctors had to go to trial. They did go to trial. And expert witnesses were brought in from the United States, from Quebec, from, you know, and women here describing the access issue and the problems they faced. So that the when the jury made the determination, they determined in the end that the doctors were not guilty, even though they clearly said they had broken the law. There was no doubt about it. They said they had broken the law. And so the fact that that happened was very, very important, and we then reopened the clinic. The Crown appealed, of course, and then it wended its way to the Supreme Court. And much to our great delight and the organizing that we continue to do, the justices made the determination, and they overturned the federal abortion law. So that was what led to the decriminalization, a very, very strong movement across the country.
So what exactly did the Supreme Court rule?
Well, it looked at the Charter of Rights and Freedoms, And it essentially determined that women's rights were being there was inequitable access across the country, which therefore affected women, and therefore they overturned it on that basis. I mean, they did leave room for Parliament, if it so chose, to enact another law, but it hasn't done so since that time. There was an attempt to do it in the early 90s under the Mulroney government, but that was defeated in the Senate.
So on the grounds, the Supreme Court ruled on the grounds of inequitable access for women, but the decriminalization of it, like, is it fair to say that that a doctor has the right to provide the abortion service, but
No, a woman doesn't necessarily
have the right to access one if she chooses. Is that fair?
No, I think it overturned the existing federal law, which was in the criminal code. And without a criminal code restriction in place, that allowed, therefore, for provinces to provide the procedures in hospitals as well as in freestanding clinics. The difficulty is that in PEI, Prince Edward Island, there are no facilities at all. And the government doesn't seem to be budging on that. And in New Brunswick, after the Supreme Court decision, a regulation was put in place, and essentially flying in the face of that decision, saying it still had to be a determination made by two physicians, and they would only provide abortions in a hospital. So the clinic in Fredericton, which is the Morgenthaler Clinic, provides probably about 700 of the approximately 1,000 abortions that are done in the province a year, but will not... the healthcare system will not pay for those, so women have to pay out of pocket, and that's a terrible circumstance that there's a court case wending its way through that is supposed to be taking that on, but the Harper government is not enforcing the Canada Health Act to force the province of New Brunswick to reimburse women for the procedure.
So is there a legal framework under the Canada Health Act mandating that such services be universally accessible?
Yes, it is supposed to be universally accessible, and this is a major problem, and it's very costly, of course, and the Harper government is refusing to put pressure on the government of Brunswick to force it to provide that service and to pay for that service in the clinic, which does happen in most of the other provinces.
So you've described the gaps in access to service on PEI in New Brunswick.
Mm-hmm.
I understand lots of rural areas within provinces and territories
That's
where there
right.
abortion in rural, or sorry, in urban centers, the rural areas might still not have.
Yeah, there's a lot of problems in rural areas. Yeah.
What will it take to make access to abortion universally accessible?
Well, I think that what we have to do, I mean, we're seeing these private members' bills. We're seeing, just recently, three Tory MPs in Ottawa were saying that late procedures should be, people should be prosecuted for murder. I mean, they're trying to up the ante, and I think what we're saying, we had a tremendously successful event in Toronto on the 25th anniversary earlier in this week with hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of people out. We just have to, the pro-choice majority in the country, and it does exist, we are the majority, has to be very, vocal and very straightforward, not only just maintaining the gains that we've made, but just saying that this, for women to be equal in society, for women to have choices, we need the right to have the children we choose to have, but we also need the right to have full access to free abortion. So we've just got to put it on the front burner and do all that we can to enforce, support our sisters and brothers in PEI in New Brunswick, and do all that we can in the other provinces to make sure that no woman is denied.
So it is the case that the majority of Canadians have that understanding that a woman has a right to choose an abortion, they don't necessarily have the consciousness that it's something that really still needs to be fought for.
Exactly. I think that's the case. The National Post, I mean, there are many different polls, of course, but the National Post did a poll that was released in November, and when asked, should abortion be available without restriction, 60% said yes. And should abortion be available with some restriction, 30% said yes. And should abortion be illegal, 8% said yes. So there's no doubt it's a strongly pro-choice country.
What do you recommend to people who are pro-choice to do if they want to get involved in expanding access to abortion services?
Well, I think particularly your listeners in British Columbia, you can go on the website of the Abortion Rights Coalition of Canada, and you can get involved there. You could become a member. You could help with fundraising and support cases that are going on in New Brunswick. And if you're on a campus, there are many campus organizations that are starting up, and there's a lot of places that people can be a part of. But I think, as I say, the Abortion Rights Coalition of Canada, the executive director, Joyce Arthur, is based in Vancouver, and there's a lot going on that people can get involved in, and all the information is there on that website.
Well, thank you very much, Carolyn.
Thank you.
You take care, and congratulations on celebrating this 25th anniversary of the victory.
Thank you so much.
I've been speaking with Carolyn Egan. Carolyn is a spokesperson with the Abortion Rights Coalition of Canada and the Ontario Coalition for Abortion Clinics.
This podcast was produced by the Red Eye Collective in Vancouver, BC. If you live in the Vancouver area and are interested in creating alternative radio with us, we'd love to hear from you. Contact us at redeye@cooperadio.org.